Coming up on the Dr. John Deloney Show.
About 3 years ago, I left the Mormon Church. I feel like I'm not holding up to the values and commitments that we started when we first got married, but at the same time, I can't go back there now that I know that it's not true.
Respect doesn't mean I agree with everything you say. What up, what up, what up? This is John with Dr. John Deloney's show, talking about your marriage, your mental health, your kids, your life, whatever's going on in your world. For the last 2 decades, I've been sitting with people struggling with mental health challenges, with emotional health issues, with trying to figure out, oh no, I just did this thing. I violated my own conscience. I violated the norms of this group, and I got to figure out how to find my way back. So here's my promise on this show. I may not have the right answer for you, but I promise I'll sit with you and we will figure out what to do next. If you want to be on the show, real callers from real places going through real challenging times, give me a buzz at 1-844-693-3291. It's 1-844-693-3291 or go to johndeloney.com/ask, A-S-K. Let's go out to Indianapolis. Did I say that right? Indianapolis, Indiana, and talk to Chelsea. What's up, Chelsea?
What's going on?
What are you doing?
I'm sitting in my car hiding from my kids, so it's quiet.
If you want to, you can just hang up and just put the seat back and just sleep for a little while. That'd be awesome.
This conversation is for sure going to take at least an hour and a half.
Excellent. I'm in. Let's do it. So what's up?
Perfect. We were wondering, my husband and I, we are kind of sick in the life of travel ball with our 10-year-old.
Oh, good.
And yeah. And so I'm wondering if, you know, in the long run, are we going to regret the amount of time and brain space and finances we spend on softball?
What is bringing you, why is this question bubbling up?
So, I am like, we have 4 kids and we kind of like parent with the later is longer, you know, like we get you as adults far later, hopefully, than we do as kids. And so, you know, my goal, we want to raise a functioning family unit that later we can still be functioning. There's too many dysfunctional adult kids running around. Not the goal. So,
well, don't do too good of a job because you're going to put me out of a job.
Well,
I'm just playing. I got plenty of work to do. I got plenty.
Right? Yeah. There's plenty of people out there that need you. I think we look at like the amount of time we put in. She's 10. She has really big dreams. And I always want to support that, right? We always want to support them in their dreams and their endeavors. We are in some form practicing 6-7 days a week. Yeah. It is a lot of family time. And as the others get a little older, I don't even know how it would be feasible to do this for 4 of them. You know what I mean?
Right, so, right. What are her dreams? What are your 10-year-old's dreams?
Currently, she wants to play for Oklahoma because what 10-year-old softball player doesn't, right?
Any softball kid from Texas does not want to play for Oklahoma.
That's fair.
That was just my Red River joke. But, okay, so she wants to go to college and play, and she wants to play at the highest level.
Right.
And by the way, she wants to play at the highest level that exists right now through her 10-year-old lens, right?
Right.
Or let me put it this way. There's 0% chance that in 8 years, Oklahoma is still the number one team in the world, right? Or in the country or whatever.
Correct.
But she wants to go to college.
Right.
So I'm just going to go ahead and get myself canceled, okay? And I'm saying this as a sports fanatic, as somebody who played what I would call the early origins of travel ball before it just became this high dollar business that we, it's like a big fire in the wood that we use our children.
Right.
And the fire is not for the kids. It's for the adults. And so I would tell you, I have a 13-year-old and I've got an 8-year-old. I also would love for them to play, college sports if they wanted to. I also require them to do one physical activity every semester, so, or every trimester, if you will. So My son runs. I ran track in college. He's a cross country kid. My daughter has done gymnastics. Now she's in Taekwondo. My son will end up in jiu-jitsu class. So all these things are important. So I'm saying that right. as a context to also say, travel sports are destroying American families, period.
Okay.
Period. And you, as a well-tuned-in mom, are feeling the pressure, if you don't do this, from these external coaches, if you don't do this, then your kid's not going to make this team. And if they don't make this team, there's no way they're going to get on this. And if they're not on this team, then how are they going to, right? You feel that. And
right.
it makes sense. And you have a 10-year-old telling you, I love this. I love it. I love it. I want to do it. I want to do it. I want to do it. And then you got that feeling in your mom gut that like something's off.
Right.
Fair?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fair. That's kind of where I'm at, is that she takes the initiative and wants to practice and wants to put in the extra work. And I love that it's teaching her that hard work pays off. And I love some of the lessons, but it is, you're right. My mom gut is saying, is this steering us in the direction we want to go, you know?
This is not every kid, okay? But this is many, many, I would say the vast majority of kids find themselves in what the nerd word is recursive relationship with the adults in their life. Their bodies are highly, highly, highly attuned to when the safe adults in their life, you and your husband, look at them. And your eyes get that very particular size that says, oh yeah, I'm proud of you. And it starts at a very, very young age.
Right.
And kids become so attuned to that, and they will chase it and chase it and chase it and chase it. It's similar to, I have inadvertently, I didn't mean to do this. Because I eat really clean most of the time in our house,
I'm here for that.
When I go get a donut or an ice cream or something like that, I always bring my kids. I'm like, let's go break the bank. And they're like, ah, you know what I've trained them is that special times require poisoning yourself. Close connection with dad equals this. And so what they do is they're always asking, can I have some ice cream? Can I have some ice cream? Can I have some ice cream? And yes, ice cream's good. The sugar's good and addictive, blah, blah, blah. What they're really asking is I want to connect with dad and I know how to do that.
Right.
See what I'm saying?
It's a pattern now.
It's a pattern, but the pattern is not about ball. The pattern is about, I want to make mom and dad see me and love me, and I found the way to do it.
Right.
And all the other adults in the world and, you know, and my fellow classmates. So it begins to expand really quickly.
Yeah.
And your 10-year-old finds herself as the head of household. She decides what the family's doing on the weekend. She decides where the money's spent. She decides what y'all eat. And you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, when I think about how much money we've spent for a fourth grade, an elementary schooler's softball hobby, it's laughable.
Right. If you just invested that into 529, you'd be able to pay outright for Oklahoma, and she could be the best intramural softball player in the whole, right?
Buy Oklahoma soon.
So here's my thought on it. It's our job to ignite passion in our kids, to support them, to set boundaries for them.
Right.
And so my kids have to do something athletic, something outside, something as a part of a team. That's so good. And they also have to know this house does not revolve around you. You have a
right.
seat in the middle or the back of the bus that is driving because mm-hmm. it revolves around me and your mom. And but that means you got to say no.
Yeah.
That means you got to say, I'm going to take some time off. Now, here's some physiology. And this isn't just me trying to make social science arguments. This is coming directly from my close friends. And I've been at multiple universities and friends that are athletic trainers. And what they are screaming to a chorus of no one will listen to them, is that these kids who become really good at a young age, they show some proclivity to soccer or to baseball or to softball or whatever it is. And they just, their whole world shrinks overnight to that sport. And they get a batting coach and a pitching coach. They get on a travel team. They play fall ball, summer ball, spring ball.
Mm-hmm.
What they're finding is joint overuse injuries in 18-year-olds that are usually reserved for geriatric populations.
Hey, Hey, we have a 10-year-old with perineal tendonitis right now.
That is that right? And so here's the way to avoid that is they have to take some time off from that sport.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Tendonitis in a 10-year-old is not, I mean, that's all you need right there. Her body is saying no.
Right.
Right. Her body's saying no. Right. And the way you combat that is soccer. Tell her to go play YMCA soccer or tell her to go do a Taekwondo class. Move your body, but do it differently. Use different muscles, different movements, lateral patterns instead of front and back. You see what I'm saying? It's about treating this whole person, not professionalizing a 10-year-old. So your mom instincts are right on.
That's what I've been struggling. You know, I don't want to like crush your little dreams, but I'm also, it's a lot, you know, for 10.
I don't know of, and again, I don't have the data in front of me, and somebody's going to, if you have something different, email it to the show, johndeloney.com/ask. I want to know the meta-analysis, put the link to the paper in that note and send it to me if you have it. I'm talking to the listeners out there. I know of zero studies that suggest travel ball equals college scholarship. Over and above a regular kid who develops normally, who then goes on to perform at college.
And I'm not even, like, the amount of players that get scholarships anyways are so small. That's not even in my mind for something like softball because...
Well, can I tell you, it's actually not true. Tons of kids get scholarships.
For softball, really.
At D2 schools, at 1A, you know, D1, 2A schools, DA, right? The NAIA schools, it's not NAIA anymore, but there's so many opportunities to play. So many.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And who knows what happens when she blows her knee out in her junior year of high school. Or, like me, I dropped the baton in first place as a anchoring the mile relay team my senior year. And I never wanted to run again.
Yeah.
And I went to college and I farted around for a year. I trained with the team, never ran a meet. And then I ended up moving on. It absolutely sucked the soul out of me. And not so much like, oh, you got to get back on the horse. I realized I'm not passionate about this anymore.
I don't want back on this horse.
Yeah. It wasn't like I couldn't get back on. I just didn't want to.
Right. Right.
And it took a earth-shattering moment to bring me to that. All that to say is, I'll reiterate it, the obsession with travel to youth sports is pulling our families apart. It's disintegrating. I would put it right underneath social media as a cancer. It's not good. I don't see in 10 years that it's still functioning in the same way. Parents can't afford it. You got 3 other kids down the pipeline. You can't, it just, the math on the calendar doesn't work. Right? It's just chaos. It's chaos.
Yeah. Season is chaos. So I'm glad to hear. I mean,
what is husband going to say?
Oh, he's the best. Are you kidding? I mean, I think that, you know, we're big onto like moving your body and eating healthy and he loves supporting her. But I think that we both feel like maybe it's a little out of balance right now. Yeah. So I think we know, you know, it's just a matter of trying to still let her do what she loves, maybe in a not as intense form.
Well, and I think letting her know, hey, if you do want to go play college ball, what the college sports professionals and even the professional coach professionals will tell you, people always want to throw like LeBron around, right? So move LeBron off. He is an N equals one. There's only one LeBron, right?
Right.
They'll tell you, I don't know anything about you at 10 years old.
Right.
Puberty changes everything. Passion changes everything. Dad gets sick when she's a freshman in high school, changes everything. I mean, who knows what happens?
Mm-hmm.
College is basically half her life away. And the idea that we are trying to invest in this thing. And so I think letting her know, oh, if you want to go to college, the best thing to do is you got to play a bunch of different sports. Like, yeah. Oh, okay, cool. And you got to do some really intensely and some just go be silly and have fun with your friends.
Right.
And letting her know, no, if you're still working towards your goal, it's not as though you're cashing out on your goal. But if that's the path forward, because the other path is just going to lead you to shoulder surgery at the age of 17, a knee surgery at the age of 18, and then you're going to have knee replacement and hip replacement surgery in your 40s. We're not doing that. I love you too much.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, you said the other day on a show, love your kids with boundaries. Why are you afraid to love your kids with boundaries? And that has stuck with me because I'm like, that's definitely not a strong point of mine.
Well, it's hard, and especially when the chorus of parents and coaches around us tell us, if you don't do this, you're failing your kid.
Yeah.
And that dreaded phrase for every parent, your kid's going to get behind.
Right.
And all of us have felt behind at one time or another, and we never want our kids to feel that. And I want to tell you, that's a myth. It's not true, especially for a 10-year-old. 18-year-old, right. She's 18 and decides to take off her senior year. Yeah, going to college is going to be really hard on a college scholarship, right? That's going to be hard. If she's there and she's all in, she's on the varsity team, she's all state, dude, go all in on that. I'm all about that. But she's 10.
We've tried reframing it for her. Like, you have to give room for your dreams to change. Because when I was 10, I couldn't even dream up what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? So you're 10, you have to allow the space for your dream to change and that to be okay. Like, don't grip that so tightly. We try to hammer home so much, who you are is more important than what you do.
Yes. Good on you guys. That means y'all are doing it right. And let me promise you one last thing.
What?
I don't know much, but I can guarantee you the NCAA looks different if it even exists at all in 8 to 10 years.
Yeah, this isn't sustainable at all.
It will be different. With the NIL, all the money that's flown in, it's just going to change. It will not exist in its current iteration. None of that matters. What matters is, you know what? My kids would eat ice cream 24/7, 365. They would sit there and rot their brains on social media if I gave it to them. If I taught my kids how to drink alcohol early on, they would begin to crave it, more than likely. So why do I tell you that? What my 10-year-old really wants to do is not going to drive every action, every dollar, every minute of our family. Because my 10-year-old, what they want to do, that has to come in a boundary that I, as a parent, am looking at saying, here's what's best for you. I appreciate what you want to do. I hear you. But here's what's best for you. So here's what we're going to do. Whew. Moms and dads, take a season off. Play a different sport. Be present with your kids. Show up. Don't burn the family financial stature to the ground over a 9-year-old soccer game. I love what you said, Chelsea. I want to create a sustainable family unit that goes into adulthood. You are right on. Good for you. We'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Winter is finally leaving the premises. There's more light, there's more beauty, the flowers and the birds are out. And sometimes when we're surrounded by things that everyone else says we should be so happy for, and it's all so wonderful, and yet we look in the mirror, we don't feel it. And we know that we should be feeling full of energy and excitement, and we should be getting it all done, getting all our work done, connecting deeply in our relationships, dreaming about the future. Our social battery should be full, but maybe it's not. Maybe things still feel heavy, like a long winter hangover. I'm hearing from people all over the world that people are facing and experiencing so many challenges, and everyone's social battery is pretty low. And of course, it's easy to get on your little phone and just scroll and scroll and pick up a bunch of influencer hacks, but maybe you don't need another hack. Maybe you need to talk to someone, especially someone who's trained to listen, trained to walk with you, and help you build self-awareness and create an action plan for what you can do next, so that you can recharge your social battery to a full charge. If you are stuck, it might be time to sit with a good friend or a mentor that you trust, or it might be time to try therapy. And I've had seasons in my life where talking to a therapist has made all the difference, and it might make a difference for you. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited for your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire, you get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time, and they don't charge you anything extra. Visit BetterHelp.com/Deloney today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/Deloney. All right, let's go out to San Diego, California, and talk to Emma. What's up, Emma?
Hi, Dr. John. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing good.
Awesome.
The weather's perfect. Can't complain.
Of course it is. You're in San Diego. It's always freaking perfect out there. What's up?
Yeah. So my question to you is, about 3 years ago, I left the Mormon church. I was born and raised. My husband and I got married in the temple, the whole deal. We've been married about 15 years. And I left. It had been happening, like my deconstruction had been happening for a long time. And I finally had enough and I told him I wanted to leave and he was very supportive and has been from that time. My question is, how do I handle our children? They're getting older, they ask questions, and every time he leaves for church alone, I feel bad, like I'm not supporting him. And sorry, I'm going to get emotional. I really didn't want to.
No, that's all right. You're good. You're good. I appreciate your honesty here.
Yeah. Every time, because he still goes, he's still active. And every time he leaves by himself, I feel bad. You know, I feel like I'm not holding up to the values and commitments that we started when we first got married. But at the same time, I can't go back there now that I know that it's not true. So I just want some advice on how to handle raising a family in an interfaith marriage, I guess.
Have you found a, it sounds like you've done the deconstruction part, but it sounds like you're still sitting in the ash.
Yeah. It is a hard transition.
Are you interested in any sort of new faith community? Is that something you're exploring?
I am. And I would like to. And when I first brought up that I didn't want to go to church anymore, and I don't know how much detail we want to get in with that, I kind of blew up my marriage at the same time.
Like with an affair?
No. Like I said, I was done, that I wouldn't continue to live in a home that we were, that we had. He is a active duty military, and he had some trouble that he wasn't willing to work with at the time that came out, and just, he was never abusive or anything like that, but he was mad a lot and he was angry and tired. And, I just said I wasn't willing to do that anymore. And I asked for a divorce, and then he was like, is this about church? If you don't want to go to church, you don't have to. And I said, it's not about church, but also I don't want to do that either. And at the time he was like, we can go somewhere else. But I think he was just trying to have me stay, you know? And then once we worked through all of that, which we have, and we have a wonderful marriage now, he was like, I'm actually not comfortable with that. So
with the
I have gone, yes, with changing churches for
okay.
him.
Okay. I want to stop you right here for a second. Okay. I want you to breathe through something with me.
Okay.
All right. Just because your marriage got right to the edge doesn't mean you failed him as a wife. And I'll go as far to say, just because his behavior got up to the edge doesn't mean he failed you as a husband.
Yeah. And we really did the work.
I know you have.
We found an amazing counselor.
I'm proud of you. I'm so proud of you. But listen, my marriage has gotten to the brink several times.
Yeah.
And we both said, all right, we're going to figure out what's new and we're going to go build that. And that's where you are. It sounds like you're having a hard time choosing guilt over resentment. You don't feel bad when he leaves. You feel guilty.
Right.
Because you have this old picture of what this duty, a dutiful wife was supposed to look like. You burned that picture, but you didn't replace it with something new. Here's how I've seen interfaith marriages work. One person goes to one place. The other person goes to another place, takes the kids, and then they all meet up for lunch and they talk about what they learned because we're not scared of ideas.
Right.
And our values, maybe at one time we thought the values are we're people of faith. The beliefs are going to change. That's life. That's scary, but that's the way the world works. That's why I read books. That's why I listen to podcasts. So my beliefs on things change. My values are the same.
Right.
And so if you value into a behavior, if you try to anchor into like, we are this, insert political party, then your beliefs change. Your understandings change. You burn everything to the ground. But if your values are based in, here's who we are. Here's how we treat each other. Here's how we explore things. Here's how we come back together after the nerd word is repair. Here's how we repair the relationship after we've had a fight. Or a season where it gets real precarious. Cool. That's awesome. What you haven't done though is replace that old picture that you burned, that you deconstructed, with a new picture.
Right.
And most of the time, my problem with the deconstruction movement, I think questioning everything is great. It's really important. Mm-hmm. Most people deconstruct based on feeling. I don't feel this is right. And that's a dangerous place to deconstruct to, because your finish line always moves.
Right.
And you want this transition to feel a certain way. It's not going to until you've been doing this new thing for a long time.
Right.
So the path forward is, I don't want to feel good. I don't feel good at this new church. That's not how the path is. The path is, for 6 months, I'm going to pick a building. I'm going to pick a box and we're going to go there. I'm going to get involved and I'm going to meet people and my kids are going to come with me, or they're going to go with him. I mean, y'all decide that, but, and then we're going to all meet up for lunch.
That's what I need help with, because I don't want them to be there.
Okay. Have you made that need known?
I have, and they don't go.
Okay.
They don't go with him, but it feels hypocritical of me to be like, they can't go there, but I'm going to take them here. I don't know how to handle.
Why is that hypocritical, hon?
I don't know. It just feels like.
It's not. That's the wrong word. It's not hypocritical.
Okay.
It's not hypocritical. What you don't have, did you grow up in that faith?
Yes.
Yeah. You don't have a picture of what growing up outside of that faith looks like. You've never seen it. That's okay. It's going to feel awkward.
I guess I just don't want to disrespect his beliefs, because my kids ask me questions and I'm not going to lie to them. And so I just say, you know, hey, like, I just realized I didn't think any of this was true. But as they're getting older, they're asking more pointed questions, and I just don't know how to navigate his beliefs with mine, but being respectful of him.
But go over the top of it. Meaning, one of the greatest gifts I can give my kids is letting them see me and their mom are ride or die. We love each other till the end of time.
Yeah.
And we disagree on things. That's a good gift to them. And my wife, the way she speaks respectfully of me, is she'll tell my son, I can't, but he's asking very pointed questions about things. She'll say, I believe this particular thing says this, and here's what that means. Here's how I act that out in life. Your dad reads it this way. And then she looks at my son and says, how do you read it as a 13-year-old?
Yeah.
Right? So now he's coming into the question. And sometimes she'll do it with our minister, J.P. Conway. She'll be like, hey, so Dr. Conway, what do you think about this? Because this is how I see it. This is how John sees it. What do you think? Because he's got training in this area that I don't have.
Right.
Right? So the respect doesn't mean I agree with everything you say.
Right.
Respect is how I talk about you and how you've come to these beliefs.
Yeah.
Why does that scare you?
I guess because in the past we have avoided hard conversations, and things are really good.
They're not.
These are really great.
They're not. Emma, they're not. Can I tell you what I think? You tell me if I'm wrong. I would love to be wrong here.
Okay.
I think you want to love him with all your being, and you can't. Because I don't think you respect the fact that he still worships there, believes those things, and is involved in those ways.
I don't necessarily think that's true.
Okay,
I do.
Good.
I adore him.
Okay.
I think that I am lucky. You know, we got married so young.
Yep.
And somehow we have made it. And I do. I adore him. I love everything about him. And okay. He doesn't push those things on me. He never brings it up. He doesn't. I don't think he holds out hope that I will come back.
I'm like almost getting choked up. I'm glad to be wrong. So you've convinced me. You love this guy. Why don't you love Emma in the same way?
I don't know.
What I'm going to say is I'm just going to cut right to it. Deconstruction is the easy part. Burning a building down, I can take down a whole building with a rag soaked in gasoline and a match. Building a building, reconstruction, that's hard. And I'll tell you what I've had to do in my personal life. That's the best wisdom I can give you, okay? I hired a former theology professor who was a theology professor for 20 years. And I hired him this year, and we meet every week. And what I said was, I've gotten to a place in my life, I travel all over the country, I meet people of all different faiths, I can pull apart just about anybody. And I've spent my whole career with theologians across the board that have just been my friends, my nacho-eating, beer-drinking buddies, like just buddies. And so I know all the arguments, I know all the conversations. But what I now have is a 13-year-old and an 8-year-old staring me in the eye and saying, yeah, but what do you believe? And why?
Yeah, and that's hard.
That's real hard. So I hired a professor. Now, I've got the resources to do that. I'm in a weird little space, right? It's not everybody can do that. I get that. But I decided I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. Because the most important thing I can do right now is to look at my 8-year-old and say, to look at my 13-year-old and say, look at myself in the mirror and say, look at my wife and say, here's what I believe and here's why. I already know what I believe. I know. But I want to be able to say it in a way, to distill it down in a way that an 8-year-old can understand it, because that means I've internalized it. That means it's in my DNA, in my mitochondria, right?
Right.
And so the reconstruction part of this is your adventure. What do you believe and why? And taking your kids on that journey is not a bad thing. If you give them a platform, I believe in God. I believe in something bigger than me. I believe, fill in the blank with what you believe. And then say, and I am working every day to figure out how it all works together.
Right.
Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. And I guess I just focus on like the things that don't line up. But the reality is like, we do have things that overlap. Like we believe in God, we believe in Jesus. And I guess I just need to focus more on the commonalities than.
You need to spend some time creating a picture of what is the role that I'm going to play in my home? What's the role of a wife and mom and co-earner and co-manager and, co-intimacy partner, like what's the role I'm going to play here? Because you had a picture outlined for you and you took that one apart. And you told me you had to do it, so I trust you. You said you had to do it. Okay. So it's been taken apart. Now you got to build back. Like, then what is this picture going to be? Because right now you're living aimlessly. You're just living not that. And it's very similar to our political parties. Our political parties aren't giving us any direction to where we want to go. All they're giving us is we're not them. And everybody's running in circles, screaming louder and louder and louder. It's not a direction. It's not a place to go. And so create the picture, co-create it with your husband. In light of this, what do we believe that's the same? Where do we begin to diverge? And not, well, it feels like, no, I'm not going to do feels. I'm going to do discipline. I'm going to get up and go. I'm going to find a place that sounds like from their website we align sort of somewhat, and I'm just going to start showing up there and start connecting with human beings, period. And the kids are going to come with me, and then we're going to all meet for lunch. We're going to talk about it, and it's going to be awkward, it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be, well, I believe this, and your dad believes that. What do you guys think? And we're going to slowly come together. Interfaith marriages are very hard. They're very, very hard. And they take some highly intentional coordination. And it sounds like, unlike most I talk to, you've got a husband that's a pretty amazing guy. So y'all create a picture and begin to live into it. And it's going to shift and morph, and that's okay. But have something to aim towards. Time to get up out of the ash. You took it apart. Start building something new. And you're probably going to need a guide of some sort. Seek that guide. Seek that spiritual wisdom with all you got. Go get it. Give me a call anytime. Anytime. We'll be right back. I am super grateful for my Hallow app. I listen to it almost every single day. And I'm not an app guy. If you ever listen to this show, you know I'm not a cell phone guy. But I love Hallow. Hallow is the number one prayer and meditation app in the world. Hallow has 10,000 plus audio guided prayers, meditations, including meditations and prayers and daily psalms, amazing speakers, some of the greatest speakers and celebrities and athletes on the planet, you name it, they are on the app. And there are prayers and meditations for mental health, including meditations to help people who are struggling with addictions, wounds, stress, anxiety, infertility, recovery, grief, and more. There's even an entire section for kids, including Bible stories and meditations to teach kids how to slow down and be present. And this is kids of all ages. I especially love the meditative music. Lo-fi, man. I'm a huge lo-fi fan, and their music is amazing on the Hallow app. I write to it. I read to it. It's incredible. If you're looking to find out what this whole faith thing is about and you don't know where to begin, or if you've been wandering down this faith journey for a long time and you want to go deeper, check out my go-to app, Hallow. And Hallow is taking care of you as a listener of the Dr. John Deloney Show. You get 3 free months of Hallow. That's everything included by going to hallow.com/Deloney. That's 3 free months of the app at Hallow, hallow.com/Deloney. All right, let's go out to Bowling Green, Kentucky and talk to Jade. Hey, Jade, what's up?
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Pretty good.
What's up? How can I help?
I just recently found out that I was pregnant, and I'm pretty young, and
how old are you?
I'm 20.
20? Okay.
Yeah. This is my first pregnancy, and
is Dad in the picture?
He is. That's actually what I'm calling about.
Okay.
He's a very good guy. We were like casually dating, and then I kind of had ended things before I found out, just because like our communication, there really wasn't anything wrong. The communication just wasn't very good on either side. And, I just thought it'd be better not to. And then I found out, and now he wants to be together, and like, he wants to move so fast. He wants to move in together. He wants to actually be together officially. And I guess my question is, like, is it worth it? Like, is it just because, like, is it worth being with someone just because there's a kid coming?
That's a multifaceted question. A lot of the answers I'm going to give you are not popular. And they're the best I got with the data we have, okay?
Okay.
And some of it's going to sound conflicting, all right? Know this. There's a book called Promises I Can Keep, which is it's basically a qualitative inquiry into single moms and why. It's a deep dive. It's by Catherine Eden and Maria. I think it is Kafalas. Anyway, that's not important. What's important, the book's important, but it won't help you in your situation right now. The reason it's important is they talk about this thing called a magic moment where couples that find themselves pregnant, they've broken up or they're separated. It has this pregnancy, the having the baby, the holding the baby, often, not always, but often brings people back and seems to, the light around this event is so bright, it covers up all the shadows everywhere else. And so I'm just gonna call him your boyfriend because it makes it easier for us to have this conversation, but I know he's not your right. boyfriend right now, but, boyfriend is, his feelings are supernatural. I mean, they're very, very normal. You even wondering, should I take him back? Makes me think that light is starting to get brighter and brighter. Let me ask you.
Yes.
Why would you even consider having him back if you've already broken up with him?
Well, I guess because my biggest issue was like our we work different shifts, so that's why it was so like hard to have a normal relationship, I guess. And like now everything's so different. Like as soon as he found out, he instantly asked to go on day shifts at work, and like his communication is it's so much better than mine even is. And like, I guess that's why I'm like, he is putting in the effort. He is a good guy. Like there is nothing wrong with him. It's just, we haven't been dating for that long. Okay. And that's, I just feel like I don't know him very well. And now I realize like my whole life is going to be like, he's going to be in my life forever now.
Yes. And I think that's the part you need to metabolize. That there's not a life apart from him. That doesn't mean you have to be romantically involved with him. That doesn't mean he's a safe person or a person worthy of X, Y, and Z. But he is in your life for the rest of your life. And so whether you join him romantically or not, y'all coming together and learning how to communicate and talk and make decisions is going to be an integral part of the rest of your life. So the more work you put in on that side now, the better.
Right.
Here's some of the data. Being a 20-year-old single mom, do you have a high school education?
I do.
College?
No.
Okay. It's going to be very hard. Very, very hard financially. It's going to be very hard. This illustrious life of the single mom, it is, looking at the data only, it is hard. And living in a chaotic, unsafe, two people who refuse to do the work to learn how to communicate with each other, marriage, creating a electric household is not good for a kid either. Do you have support outside of this guy? Are you all on your own? Do you have mom, dad, cousins, sisters, people who will lean in and help?
Yeah, I have a strong support system. Like, okay. That's the reason why I'm so like, I know I would be fine. It's just, I guess maybe it's just like, it's not what I imagined. Like, I always had a plan of like how my life would be.
Yeah, and that plan's gone, right?
Yeah,
that plan's gone. The other data, and this isn't popular, is that a kid who grows up with two parents who are on the same page working towards the same goal does really well, statistically speaking.
Yeah, I didn't grow up in a household like that. And like my mom had like men in and out of our lives and all that. And like that's the one thing, like I always wanted a two-parent household.
So if you're my sister, if you're my daughter, here's what I would tell you to do. I would be very, very clear-eyed about the financial realities of this. Where are we going to live? How are we going to pay our bills? How much? I would sit down with somebody and find out how much diapers cost, how much food for the house is going to cost. Because it's not an insignificant, trivial amount. How much childcare costs. Childcare is so astoundingly expensive. And so I would sit down and look at the real raw numbers. I would also, if you can afford it, go get I'll say marriage counselor, but a relationship counselor, and y'all two go. Okay. And you begin to learn to communicate. And I would tell them up front, this doesn't mean this goes into that we're headed towards a romantic relationship. This is us understanding that we are connected now for the rest of our adult lives.
Right.
And the best we can... Go ahead.
Sorry. He just kind of like made the decision kind of like, he was just like, it's better if we're together, and like then has like made it seem like we are.
Okay.
And like just...
And I think the sentence you gave me that is really clarifying is and instructive is, I don't know him. I slept with him. I'm having this baby, but I don't I don't know him. Right?
Yeah.
And so that's, we're going to get to know each other. And you can look at his activity, what he's done, two different ways. You can look at him finding out and saying, I am in this baby's life. Changing my shift. I'm changing how I do my life. I am all in. You can look at that and go, oh, why didn't you think I was worth that? You can do that. Or you could say, all right, I'm having a man's baby. And at the outset, he's a man of integrity thus far. He is a man who is wants to do what's right. And that, if he's sitting in front of me, if y'all two are sitting with me and he said, no, the moment I found out, I went and changed my shift. I got a second job. I'm putting money in the bank. Went and opened a checking account. I would love to marry her if she'll have me. I'm going to try to do this thing right. We did it out of order. We created chaos, but now I am getting my house in order so that I can be a calm in this storm that's coming. I would look at him and say, like, I'm proud of you.
Right.
But you are going to have that same fervor. How far along are you?
3 months.
Okay. Are you working more shifts than normal?
No, I have a full-time 40-hour job.
Jade, you're about to be a single mother.
Yeah.
There is, I'm telling you this because I love you, there is a financial reality coming that is going to be a hurricane in the harbor that makes a landfall. Have you sat down and done the math on this thing? Everything from here's how much birth is going to cost, here's what diapers are going to be, here's what my monthly budget's going to look like.
I have tried. I sat down and it was even already looking at like my doctor visit costs, and that was already so, like it adds up so quick.
So quick. So quick. Here's what I'm going to do. You know who my boss is?
I don't know.
My boss is Dave Ramsey. Does that name ring a bell to you?
Yes.
Okay. He helps people take care of their money. I'm going to hook you up with a couple of free sessions with a financial coach. I'm going to pay for it. Okay?
Okay.
And they're going to walk you through your budget. They're going to walk you through how much you make and how to allocate this stuff and to begin to come up with a plan. I'm also going to give you the Every Dollar app, the premium version for 1 year as my baby gift, okay?
Okay.
It's a way you can start to track your expenses and that way it doesn't feel so chaotic. And if you end up with this, with boyfriend, baby daddy as your permanent person, then working to get, y'all can both use the same app. You work together and you can see these expenses. But what y'all have to do is sit down and come up with a plan, because this, hey, I got a doctor visit tomorrow. It's $400. And he's like, okay, I'll get $400. Like that's going to make y'all, it's just, that's a recipe for burning your relationship to the ground. It's thing response, thing reaction. And let's sit down and go with a plan. I'm going to have this many doctor visits. Hopefully everything goes okay. Here's what it's going to cost. Do you have insurance through your job?
Yes.
Okay. Let's sit down with your HR director at your job and let's go ahead and map it all out. I need to know end point, what's this going to cost? And now you have 6 months to come up with that money. Whether mom helps you out, grandma helps you out, he helps you out, you earn it by working a second job, even though you're exhausted and you've got morning sickness, like, it's just, you're a single mom.
Right.
And let's see if there's any sort of employee assistance program to help with a lot of businesses now will cover counseling. If they don't, I'm going to set you up with BetterHelp for 3 months for free that y'all can do relationship counseling with a licensed therapist online. That way you don't even have to miss a shift. Okay?
Okay.
And together y'all can talk through it. So I don't recommend, if you're my sister, if you are my daughter, I would not recommend y'all moving in together and just playing house with strangers. I think your intuition there is right.
Okay.
But I also think your intuition that this guy's going to be in my life for the rest of my life. And I grew up in a single parent home. And so I'm gonna put the time in now to connect with this person, learn how to communicate. We're gonna start working through at least a birth budget together. We're gonna begin having these hard conversations of what life's gonna look like. If I get sick, how do you want me to let you know? If you need something, how do you want me to let you know? And we're gonna begin to connect this way and learn how to communicate together. That doesn't mean we end up, you know, all of us in one big happy family behind a white picket fence, but it does mean we can communicate. My hope is, as your friend, as your neighbor, my hope is that this guy continues to show up as a person of integrity and that you're able to be as invested in the relationship as he is and it works out. That'd be awesome. That'd be a cool story.
Yeah.
And long-term for that kid, that appears to be what the data says is the best benefit. Does that mean if you're a single mom that something bad's going to happen to your kid? No. That means they're going to be swimming upstream. Things are going to be hard. How does all this sound? I threw a lot at you. How does it all sound?
It does make me think, like, differently about things. I don't know. It's a lot to think about, I guess.
What is?
Basically, everything that you said is what I've thought already. Okay. I don't know. It's just so scary. I think that's what it is. It's just so, I guess I realize that it's so real.
Let me put it like this. You're a mom now. And your job for at least the next foreseeable future is to give that kid the best chance it got.
Right.
The greatest gift you can give that kid is mama being okay. You're going to have to run towards the scary on behalf of this kid.
Yeah, I think that that's what, and see, it's not even that I didn't want to be with him or anything like that. I think maybe it was the communication, but I was also really scared. This is like my second real, like, it's awful to say since we are having a kid together, but like, I wouldn't even consider that a real relationship. I've only ever been in one, and like, that was longer, and like, it turned, he was very abusive. And I think that might be what's scaring me also is like.
Is this guy abusive?
No, he's amazing.
Okay, then set those bricks down from the old relationship and look this guy across the table in the eye and say, hey, we're having a kid. There's a financial reality to this. There's a social reality to this. Like, where's this kid going to live? Where's this kid going to go to school? Who's going to take care of this baby? Your mom, my mom. We're going to split childcare. There's all that. And then there's the romantic interest / communication interest.
Right.
And we're having a baby. We made a human. And that human's coming. We got 6 months to plan this thing out. 6 months to plan it out. And by the way, whatever you plan, man, I had my first kid we mapped it out. None of it worked out as we planned it, but the planning process was what was important. The budget was important, but the planning process was what was critical. That we practiced planning things together so that when our plans all went to crap, then we knew how to make a new plan together. But I think you have to sit down at a table and look across the table at him and said, we're doing this big grown-up thing and I don't know you. We did this out of order, and here we are. And we're both shift workers. We're going to have to figure out all these different variables. and I think you're amazing. I'm just overwhelmed that you've stepped up in the way you have. This child is lucky to have you as their dad, but I don't know you. And so the next 6 months, we're not going to play house. We're going to get to know each other. And maybe that means we're going to date. That's probably the right way to say that. We're going to date. We're going to be together. We're going to get some professional communication advice. We're going to work together because we're in each other's lives, whether we're romantic or not. And you can tell them, my dream is that this kid grows up in a two-parent house. My dream is you and I come to know each other, learn to work together. We learn to love each other. But it's going to go in stages and it's going to take time. Hang on the line. We'll hook you up with all that free stuff. And there's a lot of scary things, but also you're having a baby. You're having a baby. If you do the work now and set the stage, you got 6 months, you set the stage so this baby comes into a world full of joy and laughter and love. That baby's born into a room of light. Go get him, Jade. We'll be right back. Hey, what's up? Deloney here. Listen, you and me and everybody else on the planet has felt anxious or burned out or chronically stressed at some point. In my new book, Building a Non-Anxious Life, you'll learn the 6 daily choices that you can make to get rid of your anxious feelings and be able to better respond to whatever life throws at you so you can build a more peaceful, non-anxious life. Get your copy today at johndeloney.com. All right, we are back. We've got a Am I the Problem? Go for it, Kelly.
All right, this is from Mandy from across the pond in the UK.
I usually would do a UK accent. And they're terrible.
Knowing you, it would be like a pirate accent.
It ends up in a pirate accent.
Or Jamaican or something
it
like that.
It always ends up, yes, arr, matey.
It does.
So I'm going to let it ride.
All right. I have a
Hello, Mandy. I can't help it.
So close.
Hello, Mandy. Arr.
Just don't.
All right.
How about that? All right. I have a reoccurring issue in my 20-year marriage. I would love for my husband to be more of a gentleman. When we were dating, I asked him to open doors for me. He hesitantly began doing it after many months of convincing. Since then, I've asked him to be a little more, like, reach for my hand when we're going in and out of cars. Put your phone away at dinner, especially when we're at a restaurant. Give me a compliment or two. When I told him that it was important to me, he told me I was asking for too much and that I expected him to be perfect.
Oh, this guy sucks.
I will go a year or two without bringing it up, but the compliments especially would make me feel loved and appreciated. Am I the problem?
No! She would be the problem if she wanted all these things and never told him and held him accountable for him not doing the things. But she has given this dude a roadmap to her heart and probably to her bedroom. And he's like, nah, I'm looking at my phone. Shut up, lady. Yeah, he's an idiot. An idiot. Men all over planet Earth would kill for this type of roadmap. Are you telling me all I need to do is tell you that you look beautiful and reach over and grab your hand and put down my stupid soul-sucking device? Okay. That's all. I mean, literally, that's all it is? Yeah, that's all it is. Cool. I'm in. Now, if she keeps moving the line on him, that's a problem. Then she's the problem. Like, if he does that and she's like, well, I need you to do it 4 times instead of 3. Or you only gave me 3 compliments. So you start keeping score, now we got a problem. But no, it sounds like she gave him a roadmap to everything. And he is too caught up with Candy Crush to even... Ah, jeez. What do you think?
She needs to find herself a nice Southern boy. He's going to open doors, pull out chairs, say yes, ma'am. No, I don't think she's wrong at all. Because like you said, it's not like she's asking for... something huge. This is...
Even if she was.
Yeah.
Just let your needs be known.
Right. But she's not. She's asking for, you know, be polite.
Human contact.
Hold the door for me.
Right.
Open my door, you know, and he's not. And so he's oblivious. Yeah. She's not wrong at all.
Guys, I get a lot of grief on the internets. Hopefully you can see how much it shakes me up. I get a lot of grief on the internets from guys saying I'm too hard on men. That's probably true to a degree. I just expect a lot of men. But this one, come on, man.
Yeah, this was deserved.
Come on. So what do you think? Is it bad to, I know people are like just dropping off as we speak here, but I have a question here and you can just edit it out if you don't have it. So is the response that she walks up to a door that he doesn't open for her and just stand there? Or is that passive aggressive?
That's passive aggressive. Okay. I agree. I think that.
Or she starts screaming. Why would you be a man? I mean, what's the right?
No, I mean, I think she has to open her own door and you know, open her and get out of the car. But I think that it's such a bigger thing than that. Now it's, we need to go get help. And if you're not willing to do this, we need to reevaluate this.
Right.
Because it's so much bigger than, please open my door for me.
Yeah, it's not about the actions anymore. It's about vulnerable. I was vulnerable and you used that against me.
I've asked you these things and you've told me that I'm asking for too much.
Now, that's right. Now we got a problem. Good call. All right. Yep. He's the problem. Not you, Mandy, from across the pond. Arr. I need to take an accent school. I'll do that in my spare time. I'm sure there's an online teacher.
That's the least of our concerns.
I love you guys. Take care. Bye.